Conciergerie Prison, October 3rd, 1793. They say the fearsome thing doesn't always work well. It takes 3 or 4 chops to sever the head. They say the amount of blood is remarkable, streaming, cascading out, thick and dark red, more blood than you would imagine a person had in him. The executioner walks proudly to the edge of the scaffold, holding up the bleeding head, the eyes staring in surprise, the mouth open in a silent cry, and as he walks, he is drenched in the gushing blood. "My husband had a lot of blood," they tell me. "He was such a large, heavy man, strong and tough as an ox. It would have taken more than one slice of the blade to kill him. They wouldn't let me watch him die. I know I could have given him strength at the end, if only I had been there with him. We went through so much together, Louis and I, right up until the day they came for him and took him away from me. He didn't try to resist that day when they came, the mayor and the others, to take him away. He merely called for his coat and hat and followed them. I never saw him again. That was 9 months ago. Now they will be coming for me, their former queen, Marie Antoinette, now known as Prisoner 280. I don't know when it will be, but soon. I can tell by Rosalie's face when she brings me my soup and lime flower water. She has given up hope that I will be spared. At least they let me write in this journal. They will not let me knit or sew because of the pointed needles, as if I had the strength to stab anyone. But I am allowed to write, and my guards cannot read, so what I write remains private. Rosalie can read some, but she is discreet. She will not betray me. Writing helps me to forget this horrible, dark little airless room in which I am confined, that stinks of rot and mildew and human waste. The hard, cold cot I lie on at night, unable to sleep, crying my heart out over my son, my little chou d'amour, Louis-Charles, or as I must call him now, King Louis the 17th. Ah, if only I could still see him, my dearest child, my little boy king. Until last August I saw him nearly every day. If I stood at the window of my old cell long enough, the horrible old ruffian who guards him, Antoine Simon, took him past my cell on his way to walk in the courtyard for exercise, making gross jokes and teaching him to sing the Marseillaise. Poor Louis Charles, only 8 years old, losing the father he loved and now deprived of his mother too. How I fought when they came to take him away from me. It took them nearly an hour. I would not let go of him. I yelled and threatened them. In the end, I begged them, sobbing, not to take him from me. It was only when they said that they would kill both my children that I relented. I know that I suffer from an excess of emotion. It is because I am unwell, and because they give me so much lime flower water and ether to drink. I do not have enough strength to keep my composure. I live on soup and bread, and I have become very thin. I bleed so much and so often that I know something is wrong, though they will not let me see a doctor. I am tired and full of tears and blood, but still I have not given up. In the messages Rosalie slips under my plate of soup, messages I read when I sit on the chamber pot, partly hidden from my guards by a screen, there is much hopeful news. The armies of Austria and Prussia are coming nearer. They are winning battle after battle against the rabble revolutionary forces. The Swedish may yet send a fleet to invade Normandy. Peasant armies in the Vendée, oh, thank heaven for the ever-faithful Vendeans, are fighting to restore the throne. I am weary. I can write no more, but I can read until they come for me. I can read this journal, the only thing I have left from my youth. I like to reread it, to relive those happier times, before I learned how cruel the world can be. Before I became Queen Marie Antoinette, when I was simply Archduchess Antonia, living at the court of my dear mother, Empress Maria Theresa, in Vienna, with all my life ahead of me.